Big Ten football championship game is tomorrow night in Indianapolis. We'll hear from Matt LePay of Wisconsin and Greg Sharp of Nebraska. 3 to 5, News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome. Great to have you with us. Thursday show, as always, brought to you by really one of the great guys and a real man of integrity and somebody who will take good care of you, Rick Weibel at REW Insurance and Financial Services, LLC. Call 800-609-9484. That's 800-609-9484. Visit online at rewfinancial.com. I am sitting in the beautiful Sunbury Motors Studio, which Jack Ham has nicknamed the Chateau. 4th Street in Sunbury and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And the Lenape Solar Hotline open at 1-800-795-9565, powered by Lenape Solar. You can go to lenapesolar.com. Time now to go to San Diego. The Penn State women's soccer team is playing in the College Cup. That is the women's soccer version of the Final Four. Now, Final Four is trademarked in basketball, but you have to at least throw some terminology out there that people understand. And in the College Cup, Stanford will play North Carolina. And at 8:30 tomorrow night on ESPN3, it'll be Penn State and Florida State. That's 8:30 Eastern time. Out to San Diego we go, and head coach Erica Walsh. Erica, first of all, congratulations on what your team has accomplished so far. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Steve. I appreciate it.
Well, what has made, you know, you've been around a lot of great teams. What are some of the ingredients in this team that has allowed them to achieve what they have?
A lot of it's in the senior leadership. We've got returning players that have been through 3 years of Big Ten championships, but also disappointment at the end of the season when the season didn't end in the College Cup or with a national championship. So they've learned and they've watched and they've been around some national champions in our building in rec hall and volleyball and wrestling. And that's where they wanted to be, and they listened and tried to emulate those programs.
Is it almost fitting that you get there because of a goal by a senior, Christine Nairn?
It is ironic, but it's no surprise at all. She's been the biggest piece so far this season. She's been the heart. She's been the goal scorer. And every great team has one, and ours is Christine Nairn.
What's interesting in this matchup is Erin McNulty. She's been there with Florida State. I mean, they reached the championship game back in 2007. Here she is for you. What has she meant to your team?
She's been the anchor in the back line. You know, it's interesting. I was at the College Cup with Florida State in 2005, and it feels like a million years ago. And that's the same thing for Erin McNulty. Is she is Penn State through and through. She loves this team and vice versa. She has trained hard and put these guys on the map in terms of being a Final Four contender. And we all know that we wouldn't be here without Erin.
And no question about it. The return of Schramm and Hayes, did it actually, they're two talented players that, of course, have been part of the mix, but was there like a 1 or 2 week adjustment just to getting them back?
I'd say it was longer than 1 or 2 weeks. I'd say it was up to 5 weeks. When they came back, Costa, Weber, all these players were playing well, and they were scoring goals against good teams. And I wasn't in a position I was just going to slide these two back in just because their season from a year ago was outstanding. We had to, as a team, we had to adapt. We had to, in training, players had to step up and perform. They had to work their way back in the squad just like everybody else did, and credit to them. After a few weeks, they both worked their way back in, and the players that they displaced allowed it to happen, but at the same time continued to push to stay in that lineup.
Was it delicate for you as a coach?
I don't know if it was the word. It was more of an anxious feeling of trying to find the right combination. I think you have a feeling of a coach that what's worked in the past will work this year or next year, and that's not always the case. So we wanted to find the right combination in as short a period of time as possible. And I don't know if we, in hindsight, I just don't think you can rush the process. It has to come, and you've got to see. Soccer is so much more about combinations than it is about individuals.
Do you like then, are you comfortable now with the combinations that you have, especially the way you attack it?
combinations are of Weber and Hayes right now, and Schramm coming in off the right side. Raquel Rodriguez combining with Christine Nairn. Again, you know, you can look at these players individually, but what makes them is the collective group.
Let's talk about Florida State for a moment. They're a team that's obviously had a great season. They go through the ACC is very difficult. And when they face ranked teams, they went 8-2 this year against ranked teams. What makes them a quality side?
Good coaching. Mark's done a nice job with that program, and they brought in big-name recruits. They've got great athleticism, but they still have good soccer players as well. I think you're going to see two pretty similar teams, two teams that like to keep the ball, but like to attack, and that like to play soccer the way it's supposed to be played. I think it's going to be a good soccer game, and that's probably what I'm most excited about is we're going to play against a team that appreciates the game the way we do.
Do you feel like your Big Ten schedule and your non-conference schedule prepared you for this moment?
No question about it. I think more than anything, the scheduling, we were fortunate in that BYU had such a big season, West Virginia, UVA, teams that you put on the schedule 3 years in advance that historically are big opponents turned out to have great seasons, and that set us up for a one seed and prepared us for tonight's match or tomorrow night's match.
I was at the 2005 College Cup when Penn State played, I believe it was Portland State, at Texas A&M, and I remember the feeling of every single strike of the ball you were riveted to. The players haven't been through this, except, well, Aaron obviously has, but what can you tell about in the moment and how every strike is important to the ball?
Told that all season long. This sport, and many other sports as well, is a game of moments, and the tide can turn just as quickly as we felt it against Michigan, when the season almost ended against the run of play on Michigan's goal. I think they appreciate that, but I do think the one thing we have to our advantage is we've had a lot of players in this program play in World Cups, which is the highest level for our sport. So I can name 6-7 players that have played in World Cups, as well as our coaching staff, and won a championship at the pro level as well. So you've got some good experience in this program, even though it's not a College Cup per se. You've got World Cup champions, World Cup captains on this team, played on the biggest stage in our sport.
We wish you nothing but the best of luck. Tomorrow night, 8:30. It'll be 8:30 on ESPN3, and we wish you nothing but the best. Erica, thank you for the time you gave us today.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thanks for the coverage.
Erica Walsh, head coach, Penn State Women's Soccer. College Cup tomorrow night, 8:30 Eastern, ESPN3. They take on Florida State. We had Erin McNulty, in fact, on the program last month, talking about her Florida State-Penn State connections. We'll come back and bring Kevin Herb back into the mix. I sense people say, ooh, don't touch the dial. Here on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
While your favorite team is driving down the field, you're driving all around looking for a new car, which is driving you crazy. Well, Sunbury Motors makes buying a new car easy with a huge inventory and lots of choices. Our North 4th Street Auto Plaza is stocked full of Ford, Lincoln, and Hyundais. We sell over a couple hundred cars a month. Why? Service and price. With our lowest price promise, if you can find a better price at another dealer on the used car you want, we'll beat it. That's a promise. And our tire rewards program gives you your next set of tires free. Shop the largest Ford dealership online 24/7 at sunburymotors.com. Let's stop in and test drive Ford, Lincoln, Hyundai at the North 4th Street Auto Plaza in Sunbury and our Kia dealership at Routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And be ready to tackle the largest inventory and our lowest price promise, selling more cars and satisfying more customers since 1915. Sunbury Motors. sunburymotors.com. The winning team.
Well, for ratings' sake, we bring back Kevin.
And I'm happy to be here. Do I get to defend my position from last hour, by the way?
Of course.
I'd like to defend my position from last hour, saying that this offense that the Steelers are running does not bode well for Charlie Batch. The reason I say that, you said yes, because everything's in the umbrella. It should be. And you're right to a point. But not being able to extend the field is also what causes Charlie Batch a problem in this offense. With Ben Roethlisberger in there, with the wide receivers healthy, they're able to extend the field a lot more, and that makes the underneath a little easier.
Okay, well, check out the Steeler package of plays this year. The vast majority, their passes in the umbrella with Roethlisberger are exponentially higher in the umbrella than they were under Bruce Arians.
Agreed, but there's still that threat to go downfield, and the Steelers have used that threat to go downfield several times, which I think makes those underneath a lot more effective. I stand on that.
You're not really watching the games, are you?
Well, last week I cried during the game, but that's a different story.
I mean, you look at the big play, like the biggest play Mike Wallace made all year was what?
It was that Monday night play.
No, that's not it.
What one?
I guess the Giants. The biggest play he made all year.
Oh, all right. Well,
And what was the route?
I don't remember the route.
It's an underneath route. Where he goes underneath, catches, and then ran away from everybody.
I understand, but I'm just saying there's no deep threat right now.
But that's the Steeler offense. There's no deep threat. First of all, you have a guy that's running pass patterns right now who stopped being a deep threat months ago. He is.
I can't really argue with you there. I have to concede.
I mean, Antonio Brown is coming back this week.
Right.
All right? To me, that is a reason for a parade. He's a good professional receiver as a deep threat. Now, no, Charlie Batch can't stretch the field.
Right.
He cannot stretch the field. We know it. But the vast majority of this offense is underneath, and they're going to need Jonathan Dwyer to have a 100-yard rushing day.
Well, and that's the other thing I was going to say. Without the running backs or whoever is in the running back position, and this week it will be Dwyer, without them keeping a hold of the football and trying to get it 3 or 4 yards on first and second down, that's going to make it a lot tougher on any backup quarterback, whoever it might be.
Right. Well, exactly. Now, the question is Batch better than Flacco?
No.
I was waiting for her to jump in.
No.
Okay. I was waiting for an angry, right? I'm getting a little red here response.
Hey, I'm not gonna yell about it. I think we all know that he's not better than Flacco. I mean, what else do I have to say? It's just pretty simple.
I know. Flacco is he's among the better second level quarterbacks.
Right. I never called him elite.
I know you never did.
Well, he did.
Oh, no.
He took care of that for you.
Okay. Yes. Flacco did.
Yeah. Flacco took care of that for you, calling himself elite.
Yeah, but I don't blame him for saying that.
Right. What else is he going to say?
I do not.
Me saying I'm an elite broadcaster.
Yeah, but we all know you're not.
Okay. Exactly. Sorry. My point. Now you see where I'm coming from.
I like my quarterback to have some confidence, and that's great.
You don't sit there and approach. If you sit there and approach your job, and you approach it in such a way where you think you're the best at it, okay?
Right.
Your chances of success grow exponentially.
I understand that. But I'm not going to go out and say that. I mean, I may feel that.
But you're not going to be asked that. He is. That's the difference in what they do compared to everyday life. The technician at Geisinger Medical, okay, in the ultrasound department, right, has the confidence that every single time that they go out there and they do an ultrasound, that they're the best in the world at doing their job. And it's an important job. Ultrasounds are critically important so that we can make the right decisions medically, okay? But that person, when they're done with the day of their job, goes into the parking lot at the Janet Weiss Children's Hospital, gets in the car, and drives home. They don't go out into the lobby and have 80 reporters waiting for them to ask them about how their job went and whether they're the best ultrasound technician in the country.
Well, that I will concede. But
that is a different ball game. When Eli Manning is asked before last season, he says, look, I'm one of the elite quarterbacks, because he was asked whether he's an elite quarterback. Nah, I don't think I am.
See,
I really don't. You know what? In fact, you know what? I don't know. I'm just lucky I'm in the league.
No, you answer it humbly.
You
answer it humbly.
Tie it into the turf.
You answer it humbly. You say, I want to think that I am, but that's not my decision to make whether I'm an elite quarterback or not.
Manning had already won a Super Bowl as a Super Bowl MVP. My goodness.
You don't make that choice. Everybody else does.
That's an elite fraternity right there. Do you think you're an elite quarterback? Yeah, I think I'm an elite quarterback. I won the stinking Super Bowl.
He is an elite quarterback. I like it has controlled swagger. Right. Mine does. Little confidence.
Flacco last year, beat the Steelers late in the game with a drive. Okay, really good quarterbacks do that. Okay?
Agreed.
He had the Patriots beat on the road in the AFC Championship game in Gillette, of all places. And he can't help it if Lee Evans can't catch a perfect pass, and he can't help it that Billy Cundiff kicks the ball toward Cape Cod.
I agree on both of those.
Okay? He has no control over that. But in the clutch, he did put his team in a position to win. Now, is he better this year than he was at that moment last year? The odd thing is that in September I thought he was. In October, November, I think he's digressed.
The only point I'm trying to make is you don't say that. If you want to think you're an elite quarterback, that's fine. But you don't come out and say, yeah, I'm an elite quarterback. No, that you say it humbly. I'm sorry. There's too many egos. And I'm not saying he has an ego, all right? I am lumping him in with several other players. But there are too many egos in professional sports right now.
Yeah, but somebody says, do you think you're among the elite quarterbacks? If you sit there and say, I'd like to think so.
The answer is, the correct answer, in my opinion, is I'd like to think so, but it's not. But I don't determine that. Somebody else makes that judgment.
But at the same time, look, the guy wins a Super Bowl, he'll be thought of in that way.
Agreed.
Right? Right now, the Ravens have put themselves at least in a good spot where, A, they're going to get a first-round bye if they continue this way, which then means in the next round they play at home. Okay? Now, if somehow the Houston Texans lose and the Ravens can ascend to the number one seed, then they have the whole thing at home. That makes all the difference in the world. This right now is one of the better home teams in all the NFL.
Well, and you look at the other side of it, this game has a lot of playoff implications for the Steelers, because if they don't win this game, they're going to have a heck of a time trying to get a wild card.
Well, right now Indianapolis is playing pretty well.
Right.
The Bengals are playing better.
Yep.
And after that, who? They can take care of the Bengals themselves.
Yeah, and they do. They control the destiny there. Miami, up until last week, I would have said Miami, but not now.
No, Miami's not it. Come on.
But I do think the Bengals, depending on how long. Here's the difference.
They're playing better.
How long's Ben out? That's the difference right now. How long has Ben out? And when he comes back, will he be anywhere near 100%?
If they're talking about him maybe playing this week, even though he won't, then it must mean he's close to playing next week.
But is a 75% Ben going to be enough? You see what I'm at? You see what I'm saying?
Look, you're getting Troy Polamalu back. No longer are they playing with 44 guys. Okay. So, I mean, good news. Okay. No longer taking up a roster spot.
Well, and he makes the secondary and Clark and those guys even better, because they.
But how do you know? How do you know? He, you know, is Polamalu at 75% better than bringing back?
No,
Ben
him just being on the field though makes those.
If he's ineffective, then no.
Yeah. Well, all right.
He's taking up a spot. He's taking up a spot if he's ineffective.
If he's not effective and he's on the field, it doesn't help them out. Right.
Against Denver last year, he was ineffective.
Yes.
In the playoffs.
But I don't know how much of that was him and how much of that was the lack of was the change up that they had to make in the secondary because of the blood illnesses. The blood illness or whatever it was Clark, I think, had it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Still.
But see, when you get Polamalu and Clark together, one plays off the other very well because Clark knows what Troy's going to do.
He thinks he does. They haven't played together in 2 months. No, I'm not kidding.
I know what you're saying. I know where you're going with that.
Didn't you just hear my interview with Erica Walsh?
Yes.
Maya Hayes, okay, and Taylor Schramm. Yeah, this is women's soccer now. Maya Hayes and Taylor Schramm played on the for the United States and the under 21 team in Japan. Right? Represented the country. Won a gold medal. Won a gold medal. So they had to sit out part of the Penn State season because they were over in Japan at the time. Then they came back, and one of the toughest things she had to do that took 5 weeks. Okay, it's not that simple. Play, we got two great players back, plug them in. You get used to playing with what you have. It's not, everybody thinks, back, it's easy. It's one thing to plug in a quarterback. Okay? It's another thing to plug in an offensive lineman. It's another thing to plug in really anybody in the back seven. There's a coordination that's needed. There is, you have to have, obviously, we talk about cohesion on the offensive line. You need cohesion on defense, too. Well, nobody talks about cohesion on defense until you talk to a coach.
Steelers' issue really hasn't been defense the last couple of games, that's for sure.
Well, it's going to have to be really good this week, because I can tell you right now, they're not scoring a boatload of points, even though the Baltimore defense is ranked in the bottom fifth of the NFL right now, which is a shocker. People don't realize the Ravens defense, I think 2 weeks ago, they were statistically 27th.
At 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
All right, Sunbury Motors, 4th Street at Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Key Routes 11 to 15, Hummel's Wharf. Lenape Solar Hotline open at 1-800-795-9565. Powered by Lenape Solar. You can go to lenapesolar.com. You'd like to jump in on this conversation, you can. And, of course, today's show brought to you by Rick Weibel at REW Insurance and Financial Services, LLC. Call 800-609-9484. Or visit online at rewfinancial.com. Can't say enough good things about Rick and the great job he does. Kevin defending the Steelers, Sarah defending the Ravens, I as a neutral observer.
This is just normal.
Yeah, I was going to say, this
Sunbury is broadcasting.
Yeah, this is just a normal day here.
I mean, you know, I'm a neutral observer in all this. You know, that's why when I sit there and I talk about the Steelers and what they run, I just talk about what they run. I don't do it with my heart.
Well, would you rather the Giants play the Ravens or the Steelers in the Super Bowl?
So the Giants
I think he would rather the Giants just be in the Super Bowl and play anybody at this point.
Yeah, you know. You know, I enjoy watching it. Watching the Giants play, the whole thing, they've always been my team, but I don't...
You don't live and die with the team.
No.
Yeah. Yeah, I understand that. Yeah. I understand that. I live and die with the team. I really do. I have a lot invested. I have a lot of my life invested in being a Steeler fan. And I went through the 80s, which was very painful after 1980.
No. The only time... Let's see. It used to be I lived and died with the Red Sox.
there was more dying than living with the Red Sox for a while.
No, but I'm saying, though, but then when they, once they won, they won. You know, and I was, you know, after that, it's kind of like, okay, you know, I mean, you know, I want them to win, but, you know.
Well, from 1979 to, what was it, Super Bowl 30 with... Yeah. It was a long time to go between Super Bowls if your team isn't in it, not to mention not even being in the playoffs.
Yeah. Well, you know. Look, the Giants, look, when I was a kid, right, back in the leather helmets days, Steve Ohm was the coach. It was a great, you know, the 30s were a little depressing.
The goalposts were up in front and not in the back of the end zone.
Actually, when I was a kid, the goalposts were on the goal line.
Yeah.
They were. The Giants were terrible. I mean, when I was really little, I'm talking like really little. My father loved the Giants. My mother liked the Giants. And that was when I was really young, it was Y.A. Tittle, Frank Gifford, and so forth. I mean, those were the players until I was like 5 years old. But after that, they were awful. 1-12-1. And I would sit there as a kid and I would watch every game. Right. Brutal. Right? Then I thought it was a big deal when they got Fran Tarkenton and got the 7-7. I'm like, hey, we're 7-7. I'm like, oh, even though now I realize years later that's called mediocrity.
Which was good by that point.
At that point, mediocrity looked great.
Right.
Then 1 year, in 1970, the first year of the merger, the Giants almost made it. They went 10-4. Right? They had a great year. They won like 6 in a row. And then the last game of the season, if they won, they would have made the playoffs. They lost. I thought they're never going to make it. Then they were 71. They were terrible. 72, they were 8-6, which was all right, but still not good enough. And then they went into the tailspin of all tailspins. And then I remember when they finally got Bill Parcells, right? And they went like 3-12-1, right? So they go 3-12-1, okay? And it's like that. All of a sudden they made the play. I was like, you have to be kidding me. What's this like? I didn't know what it was like. Let's go to Dave in Sunbury. Hi, Dave.
Hi, Steve.
How are you, Dave?
Okay. How's Kevin Hurd doing in his great Steelers?
Well, it was a long week, a long Sunday. Let's put it that way.
Well, as long as the old Chuck and Duck going there, I mean, you know, and nobody wants to hold on to that thick skin.
Well, that was the big problem there.
Well,
what's on your mind, Dave?
Well, Steve, when are you going to get around to getting Cal on? You got anything lined up yet?
Getting who on?
Cal Sanderson.
Oh, Cale Sanderson.
Oh, Cale Sanderson.
Yeah.
We'll work on that.
Okay.
We'll,
just
I know people want to have him on. I understand that, and I will get. We had him on in. Wouldn't we have him on May?
Yeah, I think so.
We had him on in May, and yeah. We will get him back on again.
And then there's Kevin.
You know.
Hey, Kevin, when's the basketball season start?
Basketball will start on Friday night on the road with Shikellamy in Central Columbia. Next Friday night.
When's the paper going to get around to putting that to bed so people know wrestling and basketball, what's going on?
Well, that all cranks up next week. They're both in their training sessions now.
Yeah.
We'll call it that. We're the warm-ups. And everybody's just making the switch now from football to basketball, so it takes another week or so.
Okay, just wondering.
Now,
your freelance Palomalo is freelancer.
What's that?
When he did the defense,
yeah,
he freelancer.
They freelance him a lot, yes. You're right. Right.
Oh, absolutely. Oh,
I'll let you go. Talk to you later.
Thank you, Dave.
Yep.
And, Sarah, you have the schedule up on the website, right?
Yeah, we do. We have the Shikellamy Wrestling and Shikellamy Basketball schedule up at WKOK.com. So I just put that up there. So, and all the Penn State basketball games as well.
It's great. Looking forward to that. All right. Penn State basketball, by the way, we'll be talking about that in about an hour and a half with Patrick Chambers in the clubhouse at Damon's from 6:05 to 7, and we're looking forward. We'll talk to him about, you know, obviously the big adjustments they have to make, and they have to make huge adjustments. And look how the Big Ten's playing. Michigan looked incredible. Indiana looked great. Now, Ohio State lost last night at Duke. Illinois is surprisingly better than I thought they would be. And, you know, the Big Ten, Michigan State's really good, even though I know they lost to Miami last night. So,
you know, something we talked about earlier today, Wilton Lopez is not going to the Phillies right now. He was in Philadelphia reportedly for a physical, and the Phillies aren't commenting because they don't comment on deals that didn't happen. So that deal fell through, but I'm wondering if it might go back to the elbow problems he had there this past season. Maybe that's why they decided against finishing that trade.
Well, could be, because he's somebody that I think, if healthy, would have brought a lot and solved a couple of problems in the seventh and eighth inning.
Now, I guess the Phillies are still looking, obviously, for someone to set up. Ryan Madsen was one of the guys they were looking for, who was their setup man for a couple of years and then their closer. He ended up signing with the Angels. I think Mike Adams is another one the Phillies are looking at right now.
Yeah. Okay, that'll help.
Well,
okay.
They wanted him when he was with San Diego a couple of years ago, but so mm-hmm. that's why I've there might be interested again.
I know one of the Padres owners.
Right. You do.
Yes, very well. And you don't want him. All right, Ben Roethlisberger doesn't sound like a guy who plans on playing against the Ravens Sunday. The injured Steelers quarterback said today he is still in significant pain from the sprained right shoulder and dislocated ribs that have forced him to sit out the past two games. Roethlisberger said, quote, there's always a chance he could play against the Ravens, but isn't sure his injured arm will cooperate. When asked if the issue is pain or arm strength, he said both.
That's not promising.
Not promising. He's out.
That's not promising at all.
He's out.
No, what I'm saying
is, get used to it. No. He's out.
I'm not talking about just this week. I'm talking about for the next couple of weeks.
Exactly.
I mean, that doesn't even sound good for a couple of weeks.
Against the Ravens, since 2004, including the playoffs, when Big Ben starts, the Steelers are 9-4. When he doesn't start, 0-6.
I was going to say 5, but I missed one.
Yes. Sarah, stop dancing.
I've got a big smile on my face.
Still got to play the game.
I know. Listen, who knows what will happen. I don't know what Joe Flacco will come out on the field.
No, we didn't ever know that from week to week. Now, the Saints play the Falcons tonight on NFL Network. We're having a big party, a little chip and dipper over at Kevin's house this evening. We can get to sit there and watch his son play video games as we watch the game. Nothing greater than that thrill like we had last Friday. New Orleans Saints players say their bus was pelted with eggs. All right. Now, I mean, what kind of unruly fans do that? It's not the unruly fans. It's the airport workers. Tight end Jimmy Graham and linebacker Will Herring, quarterback Chase Daniel, tweeted about the incident Wednesday night at Hartsfield-Jackson Atlanta International Airport. The Saints 5-6 face the first-place Falcons 10-1 tonight, Georgia Dome. New Orleans has won 4 straight and 11-13 in the series. Graham wrote on Twitter, bus just got egged after landing at ATL by the ramp workers. Very classy. Daniel tweeted, wow, we started getting eggs thrown at us by airport workers. I guess they do hate us. Herring seemed amused by the incident. First time my bus has been egged by opposing fans. Game should be fun. The airport workers did it. Yeah, now what gets me is tonight they're being honored as the honorary captains of the game.
The airport workers?
Yeah.
You're kidding me.
Yes, I am.
I was going to say, for a minute there, I was following along, but I'm like, no way.
They're not. They're not going to be. You know? But how about that?
Just for a minute I was following there, but it seemed a little too crazy for that.
Last 4 meetings have all been won by New Orleans. Drew Brees is 11-2 against them. They've averaged almost 30 points a game against the Falcons in those 4 wins. 409 yards a game. 8-14 red zone. Falcons are 4-14 in the red zone against the Saints in the last 4 meetings. They've had their number. So, there you go.
And the latest update for Vic is he did not pass his concussion test today, so he still can't even practice. So he is
he's not passing that test for a while, okay? It's a nice update, but, I mean, he's not playing again this year.
Yep, he's out for Sunday Night Football.
Yeah, with Dallas. Imagine the excitement that right now Al Michaels is on a conference call with Chris Collinsworth saying, what do we do with this? What do we do with this?
Well, let's see. Nick Foles is going to be your quarterback. He's thrown for 500 yards, a touchdown.
All of you wanted Nick Foles. You got him.
That's true.
Y'all wanted him. Every time they get rid of him, play Foles. All right. You're playing Foles. How do you like me now? How about that?
You know, the most popular player on a football team is the backup quarterback.
Uh-huh. Michael Motti wrote a thank you letter to the Penn State family. the Marty family wrote this, not just Mike, but the entire family. We are not sure where to begin. The outpouring of support that we have received has been truly humbling and moving in more ways you can imagine. We could not be more touched and honored to be included in this incredibly unique community. Saturday was truly special for our entire family and for all the seniors and their families that know what the words commitment, family, community, and leadership really mean. We will remember that day for the rest of our lives. I don't think the phrase thank you does enough justice, but our family, to the entire PSU community, thank you for every emotional fiber in our hearts. We are as proud as ever, the Motti family. There you go. By the way, The Journey did a very nice piece on Big Ten Network about Michael Motti. Very nice. Well done, very emotional, the way they did it. And it brought out that emotion about how, about what happened to him. So. Well, you okay there? Are you overcome with emotion? What's the problem?
Well, no, I ran across something here that I thought was really kind of strange, and I was going to share it, and I was debating whether to, so I'm going to do it anyway.
Why don't you share it after the break?
All right, let me do that.
All right. Today's show being brought to you by Rick Weibel at REW Insurance and Financial Services, LLC. Call 800-609-9484 or visit online at rewfinancial.com. We'll come back with more on News Radio 1070 WKOK after this.
Hi, I'm Rick Weibel from REW Financial. I strive to take an eagle-eye approach to your financial future to help give you the freedom to make powerful decisions. I work with you to help you find the discipline you need to get the results you want. I don't believe in just setting it up and letting things go. I'll always be looking to see how we can make things better. REW Financial is an independent company committed to the highest standards of integrity, ethics, and value throughout your financial journey. See us in Lewisburg and Brook Park Farm. Call 800-609-9484 or visit us online at rewfinancial.com.
All right, Captain TMZ has something.
Well, we talked about all these conference realignment situations in football, but what about the Big East in basketball? I mean, there's going to be Georgetown's sitting by the wayside and looking back. I mean, when are they going to move to do something from a basketball standpoint?
Well, this has been part of the confusion in the Big East for a long time, the basketball schools versus the football schools. I mean, this has been an ongoing issue. And I think it might be time for them to sit there and think about forming, for the lack of a better term, a Catholic basketball league. I mean, Marquette, DePaul, Georgetown, Villanova, St. John's. I mean, they have the basis there for it. They're already all in the Big East together now.
And by the way, the craziest thing I ever heard was the Big East East and the Big East West as a division. Splitting it up to the Big East East and the Big East West. That's the best name you could come up with?
Well, I don't know. You could come up with something clever like Leaders and Legends.
Yeah, but the Big East East, which would be abbreviated as B, yeah. And the Big East West, which would be BU.
That's the craziest thing you've ever heard.
Well, it's right up there. It's right up there. Most everything the Big East has done in the last year and a half has been pretty crazy.
Well, you know what? You know what? They're trying to somehow save themselves.
There's nothing to save. You can't save the ship that is terminally ill and sinking.
I'll say this. I mean, after Louisville, they're going to be up to about $125, $30 million in exit fees. I mean, they're actually pretty rich.
They're lucrative that way. That's true. They're not going to make any money any other way.
When it comes to exit fees, they lead the league. I mean, they are way ahead of everybody else.
And in an era of realignment of conferences on what seems to be an almost daily basis now, Oklahoma and Nebraska said they're going to renew their rivalry in 2021.
Good.
How can you plan to 2021?
Everybody has that. I can tell you what the Penn State schedule is in 21-22.
I don't understand that. How can you do that?
But that's how do you do that?
How do you do that in 9 years? It as,
because you're trying to fill up spots over that 9-year span, which makes it easier to put together travel, hotels, and everything like that. Money, budgets. You know, because you know a team comes into Penn State, they're going to get a a guarantee. Depend things are worked out in different ways. When Penn State played Notre Dame, for example, when Penn State went out there, Notre Dame paid for all of Penn State's expenses, and there was no guarantee. Paid for the hotel, paid for the flight, paid for everything else, you know, whatever. Right? Notre Dame got to keep the money. When Notre Dame came in here, Penn State paid for their hotel, their flight, things like that. Blah blah blah. No guarantee. Now, you get into a game with Oregon State. When Penn State played Oregon State in 2008, the guarantee was $800,000. These things are worked out. Okay, Colorado got $1.2 million to play at Ohio State last year just to go in and get their brains beaten in. And that's what it is. I mean, that's what you have. I mean, that's how it's worked out. You know, these are things that are proposed. They aren't etched in stone until the contracts are signed. You have to have the contract signed. Now, basketball is a different entity. Sometimes in basketball, you have multi-year contracts. Penn State and Bucknell, they have a multi-year contract, and the door is open to possible expansion of that contract. Okay? Penn State and Duquesne have a multi-year contract to play each other. When Penn State played Pitt back in the early 2000s, it was a 4-year deal. They had put together... You know, and they try to put together some home and aways with these teams, and then you attempt to balance out the schedule after that. Now, but most basketball scheduling is done in the off season on a year by year basis. Penn State didn't pick up New Hampshire, for example, until April or May. You know, because Penn State thought they were going to be playing in the Barclays Center against Manhattan on December 22nd. Then Manhattan, some things happened with them, so it fell through. So they had an opening. They wanted to get one more game in. They needed to. And so they got a hold of New Hampshire, I think, in late April, early May to get them on the schedule. So basketball scheduling, for the most part, non-conference, is done on a year-by-year basis with a couple of exceptions where you have multi-year deals with teams. Football, done way in advance, always has been. And it doesn't always pan out. I mean, back in 1982, for example, 82 and 83, Penn State was supposed to play Auburn. Home and away. Right there in the schedule. Never happened. Auburn opted out. I mean, you have the playoff scenario in 2022, but you don't like the fact that Oklahoma and Nebraska are to be playing then? Today's show brought to you by Rick Weibel at REW Insurance and Financial Services, LLC.